Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Since taking office a year ago, Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles has joined us almost every month to talk about things going on in the city. And today, as we enter the waning moments of 2018 and approach the beginnings of 2019, she joins us again to look forward and to look back on the year that is about to end. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Mike, and thanks to all the listeners that send me emails that we're doing a good job talking together. Oh. So I really want to say thank you to them.
Well, good. Speaking of emails, you can do that. You can join us via email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for us on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Let us begin with the news that came out actually on this show 2 weeks ago, but yesterday it was announced that something is beginning. The flag is being raised, the probe is going out, the hammer is about to come down. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
The Panthers. A couple of weeks ago, the Carolina Panthers, their play-by-play announcer, Mick Mixon, appeared to let the cat out of the bag at an appearance he was making at a lunch he was speaking to in York County, South Carolina. He told them at that time that, what would you think if I told you that the team was moving here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently they might be. The Panthers have now announced, although the tales of this are a little sketchy, but they have announced that, yes, they are in fact planning to explore building a team headquarters, building and practice facility in York County, mm-hmm. just over the state line. That location might be one of the locations under consideration is Knights Stadium, the old Knights Stadium, and the Charlotte Hornets practice facility off I-77 in Fort Mill. What's your reaction to that?
My first reaction after reading that story was there were a lot of mites and maybes and whatever. And my experience with the Panthers owner, Dave Tepper, is that he's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't said anything to me about this. And I think that I'm going to rely on his ability to communicate and be straightforward around this. I know he's hired Mark Hart, who's going to be their development person, and I am hopeful that they make good decisions and we can move forward.
Apparently, the Panthers really haven't said anything about this to anybody. York County officials have not been talked to about this, although the Charleston, of all publications, the Charleston Post and Courier is reporting this. And Mick Mixon, as I said, the play-by-play guy, kind of alluded to it, and I didn't know whether that was a trial balloon. Mick's a smart, smart, smart guy.
I don't know.
So I don't think he would let the cat out of the bag if it weren't like, why don't you let the cat out of the bag? We'll put a couple of feelers out here. So if this turns out to be true, mm-hmm. is this a shot across the bow? Is this the first step in saying we want a new stadium, Charlotte? And if you don't give it to us, we'll take the whole thing to South Carolina. Because they're moving 300 jobs there if this goes through.
Well, as I've said, David Tepper is a pretty direct guy, and if he comes in and he says, I'm doing this, then that's when I'll start talking about it. But he hasn't done that yet. And we've got so much to offer in this community around the Panthers' ownership and PSLs and the support that this community has given. Now, a lot of that is, as you say, North Carolina and South Carolina supporting that team. So I understand how you can say, well, let's look at things and look at options.
Well, infrastructure improvements are one of the things that he's interested in doing. He also he does want to improve the practice facilities. They practice outdoors. It's one
That's
of the few
true.
Teams, NFL teams in the country that practices outdoors, and evidently their practice facilities are subpar for the NFL because they've been around for a long, long time. That must mean that stadium enhancements of some sort.
Well, it certainly means practice field enhancements are necessary and essential. If you're going to be playing in a very, very cold and snowy, icy place, you don't necessarily want to practice on an outdoor, balmy day. You want to simulate the atmosphere that you're going to be in. So I think the practice fields have come a long way. We visited the practice fields in Dallas and Atlanta and seen what the opportunities are, and I'm sure that the Panthers are looking at those same opportunities.
Back in 2013, in exchange for, I think it was $87.5 million in city-funded improvements to the stadium itself, then-owner Jerry Richardson agreed to a hard tether, mm-hmm. put that in quotes, keeping the team in Charlotte. That tether expires next season, 2018-2019. What does that tell you?
We're very much aware of the tether and what it means. And it's just, I think it's reflective of the way we are working really hard on economic development strategies for our city. We're going to have to be out there and be competitive in everything that we do now. You can see the changes that we're making. We had two really great job announcements this past month, or actually this month we had two great announcements. And it just shows every time someone comes in, you have to work hard to have a partnership with them. And just as we work with Honeywell and LendingTree, we're going to work with the Panther organization.
But if they move the team headquarters to South Carolina and they move the practice fields to South Carolina, that's 300 employees, I'm told. Now, not all of them would necessarily move out of Charlotte, but would Charlotte and or North Carolina lose some sort of revenue, tax revenue, from that moving to across the border?
Well, as you know, the tax revenues are really a part of the athletic, I guess, economics. So whenever anybody plays in our city, they pay income taxes to our state. Mm-hmm. And we actually gain by the sales taxes. So we look really carefully at how does this equate to being able to stay in Charlotte or move out of Charlotte. I'm sure they're going to look at the same thing.
Jerry Richardson told me a long time ago that he wasn't going to be alive forever. This is long before the problems, mm-hmm. but he said he wasn't going to be alive forever, and that Charlotte and Mecklenburg County and the state of North Carolina better get ready, because their new owner would be in place, and it would be a billionaire, and it would be somebody who's going to do what they want monetarily. We better be ready to ante up for a new stadium.
I think that's advice that he had, and I think that I've heard other people give that same advice, that we have to be ready.
I'll be ready.
But let me say this. We need to be ready to do our best job, but we have to assess and evaluate. This isn't something that we just do because someone says you ought to be ready. Mm-hmm. We're only going to do it if it works for our community.
So do we have to wait until they lose or win this weekend to decide just how ready we are?
I don't know. I think maybe they need to consider how ready they are, but we're hoping for a win this weekend. Monday night's going to be pretty significant in the city. I expect about 4 o'clock to have a lot of people on the streets for the game.
What do you think the reaction would be among council, among county commission, among citizens, if they say, we're going to move the thing, the headquarters and the practice facilities to South Carolina, and that's the opening. And that's the opening shot. Should we read that? That's the opening shot.
I don't read anything into this except a newspaper story that came out that has a lot of maybes and mightbes. When we start talking to the Panthers, then we'll know. And when they start talking about the development and what they want to do, I hope that they'll have a comprehensive plan for us.
Is there an appetite, if they want a new stadium, to help make that happen?
Well, there will certainly be a test of that appetite for the community, and I think that that's fair. I think the community has to weigh in, and we have to either show that the numbers work or they don't.
Okay. It's fairly warm out today compared to what was going on here last weekend. And we did dodge the worst of the winter storm.
We did.
The rest of the state got pretty hammered, but we did open shelters. How many shelters did we open? How many people did they handle? Are they still open, or have they gone back to normal shelter
activity? We had shelters so that anyone that, and you know, we have many programs, but we work on people on the street. We had shelters to make sure that they could stay in a warm place, and we had several open. I think we had some use of them, but we did dodge a lot of that storm, and so the weather really wasn't as cold as we thought.
Okay. Now, the last time you were here, we talked about the desire on the part of some people on city council for 4-year terms, mm-hmm. and you weren't too keen on the idea, if I recall correctly, or at least you were kind of hedging your bets. Council's decided to put off a decision on this until next month, I think. Why?
Because we had so many important items on our agenda, we just couldn't get to that. 4-year terms are a discussion that can occur at any point in time. But we had other business items. We were talking about some of our economic development, our housing growth. These things are more important than that discussion. We'll have that discussion soon. But as I pointed out last time, we've got the 2020 census coming up. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a big part of our work for drawing our new districts, making sure that we're aligned with the population and the requirements for the voting. What I wouldn't say requirements, but making sure that every vote counts in this community. So I think that's when you start talking about 4-year terms.
Just kind of off the subject, but given what's going on in Bladen County, does the city have any role to play in overseeing the Board of Elections here to make sure everything's on the up and up here?
No, the city does not. That is a county function and a state function. But I have to say that our Charlotte Board of Elections, or Mecklenburg County's Board of Elections, has always had high marks. Michael Dickerson does a great job.
So a lot of, and we talked about, a little bit about this last time, but a lot of Charlotte's peer cities like Nashville and Denver and Seattle and even Washington, D.C., which seems like a big city, but that's only because of the metro area, and not the actual city itself is smaller than Charlotte. Columbus, Atlanta, they all have councils with four-year terms. Asheville, Cary, Greensboro, Wilmington, Gastonia, Winston-Salem, all smaller than Charlotte, also have councils with four-year terms.
You're making the argument for four-year terms.
No, I'm just asking you, but I'll hold that question for just a few minutes to give you a long time to think about it. We'll come back and get an answer to that. Okay. Should we or should we not in just a moment? It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles is with us. We have a wide-ranging conversation ahead of us in the next few minutes, but let's go back to four-year terms.
Okay.
Aren't you glad you came?
I am.
For city council, there are only certain things that the city can do because of state law. I just found out off the air that the mayor, it could be proposed that the mayor serve three, mm-hmm. or four-year terms, mm-hmm. but council can only be a two-year or a four-year term. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And what's so important about that is that if you didn't know this, how many other people don't know it? And this council has come in and used the word transparency a lot around a lot of policies and issues. To me, this is one of the most important issues that requires transparency, and that means we have to educate people and our citizens don't know what we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. So in my sense of this is that the form of government should really be driven by the community, the people that live here, reside here, that have to do the voting and have to pay for the election process and are committed to it. So that's one of the reasons that I understand four-year terms are important. To some, but after 1 year of serving as mayor, I can see how many things we've started. And certainly, anytime you start something, you want to see the success of it, and that would help. But at the same time, government is about people, and we need a process that talks about education and having the citizens participate.
But I mentioned these peer cities, Nashville, Denver, Washington, Columbus, Atlanta, have councils with four-year terms. And all the cities in North Carolina that are of any significance but are smaller, all of them, mm-hmm. than Charlotte have four-year council terms. So do you understand why? Can you explain that and why we don't?
I think each community is unique. If you look at Greensboro, some of that was because of the state decided what their terms would be and how they would be elected. And I don't think that the state legislature should be making that decision, but they have in some cases. Greensboro being one, I believe Raleigh School Board was mm-hmm. restructured by the state legislature. But we want to construct the community elections that the community wants, and that's where I'm going to
What are you hearing out there? Because you're out there every single day talking to people. Are people talking about this at all? And if they are talking about it, what are they saying about it?
I have not heard very many people talking about four-year terms.
Okay.
What I hear out in the public when I'm going out there is, what are we going to do next with our affordable housing? How are we going to proceed on scooters and mobility options? So I don't hear a lot of conversation around four-year terms.
We're going to talk about affordable housing, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about scooters a little while from now. But we didn't get Amazon, but we did recently get Honeywell. They announced a few weeks ago that Charlotte is their choice for to move their corporate headquarters from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. This is a Fortune 100 company. Reports say they'll be creating 750 jobs mm-hmm. over the next 6 years, but that includes 150 jobs currently at their headquarters in New Jersey. So I guess they're bringing 150
people. We hope they'll bring that number of people, but those number of jobs will come. This Saturday, I went to speak to the families of Honeywell. They were coming down to visit because this is a move during the winter. There are school decisions and housing decisions to be made, and I wanted to make sure that they knew that we were a welcoming, diverse, and inclusive city and encourage them to come because that talent is important for them to continue. But the other jobs will be new jobs that will be generated over the next 6 years.
It's about 500 jobs. When you said it's going to be a winter move, what winter?
Well, this winter.
They're doing it now?
They are moving. There are families coming down, making choices right now about where they want to live and where their children go to school, and they will have temporary headquarters for a while.
Really?
Yes. This is
That's fast.
It is absolutely one of the most I'm really grateful for the opportunity to see how this works and plays out. But Honeywell is pretty much committed. So, yes, they're going to be coming very, very soon.
So what do you see as the economic impact of the city of this move?
You know, the first thing, I think we're going to gain a great corporate citizen partnership. Before Honeywell made this decision, they had donated $1 million for hurricane relief to our coastal areas. So first of all, I see that opportunity for them to be a part of what I call our fabric of public-private partnerships. And then the second part of it, I think whenever you bring families in, then they participate in our civic life and our educational decisions, we're going to do well because we're introducing more people that choose to live here. And in a way that they bring about talent and a very well financed and successful company.
These jobs are said to pay or promise to pay about $85,000 a year. Is that all of those 500 jobs or 750 jobs, or is that a median average?
That is an average. I think the headquarter jobs have been reported to be over $300,000 each. So when you come in and you are doing that in the headquarters, $85,000 for the median average for that group of new employees, that's really lifting and where we want to see our economic mobility
go. What kind
of
people are they looking for? If they have to fill 500 jobs, what kind of people are they looking for? What kind of skills?
They are the largest, I think, manufacturing, industrial, and aerospace in the country, one of the very largest across the globe, I believe.
And
so we're going to see them.
They make thermostats.
They make thermostats. They make a lot of things that we all use in housing, but more importantly in our airline industry.
So are they looking for scientists, computer programmers,
well, you know, every time you hire a scientist, you have to hire a lab assistant, and then you have to have someone that actually cleans and takes care of the lab. All of those jobs. So you think about that one job, that one scientist job, that one scientist may need five other people to support his efforts.
How long have they been?
Her efforts.
How long have they been at their current headquarters, which I think is in Morristown, is that
New
right?
Jersey.
New Jersey?
Mm-hmm.
How long have they been there?
They've been there several years.
Several years?
Yes. Oh, I think at least exceeding 10.
Okay, because I know that they looked to move out of New Jersey several years ago, and the state gave them $40 million tax credit to stay for 3 or more years.
Mm-hmm.
Did they stay for the 3 or more years?
I can't speak to what they did and how they negotiated with the state of New York, but I read the New York Times article about that this past Sunday, and there was the article, and really what the article is debating is incentives and how this country and how cities are doing recruitment, and I think that's a valid discussion to have. It's one that I'm aware of and have begun to really think through. How do you do incentives, and how do you compete? Or what is our advantage to doing that?
Who negotiated this? Because we're providing incentives. Who in the city negotiated with?
Well, we have a new economic development director, Tracy Dotson, and of course the city manager was a part of it. We also work very closely with the governor's office and the state legislature to get this done.
So, do you believe they know if Honeywell lived up to their part of the deal in New Jersey?
I don't know whether they know that or not, but okay. I certainly think that it's a point that is a valid one, that we have to look carefully at what is the commitment for coming here. And there was, I think, a conversation about that in the negotiations. How committed are you to Charlotte? And it's got to extend beyond just the time that we're going to do the incentives. It has to be a commitment to be a part of this community.
North Carolina approved $42.5 million in incentives over 12 years. It's the most the state has ever offered, I'm told. The city and the county are offering $46 million in tax breaks. City Councilman Tariq Bakari said on this program that this is a good deal, one that he would take any day of the week. Is it? Because it actually, he says, pays out more than we're giving.
Well, Mike, I worked really hard on this deal with a number of good people. I have to say especially thanks to Senator Bishop and to then Representative Brawley. We work with the governor's office. I think that overall you can say that from the governor's office to the people in this community, this is a good deal for Charlotte. We haven't had a Fortune 100 company come since, I believe, 2011.
Because as he explained it, as Tarek explained it, it pays out more than the incentives that we're paying for
them. It will. It does.
If they live up to their part of the deal.
That's right. But we have, I have to say this, we've learned a lot about this incentive world, and we do, it's not if you live, because you don't get it until you do the work.
Okay.
You don't get the incentives until after you've accomplished the goal.
Okay. So they have to stay here.
Well, no, they don't have to.
But to get the money,
they have to stay here.
So
that's right.
So where will they actually physically locate? What area of the city is going to be impacted by this?
I'm not really sure. They've not announced their headquarter locations. I think just like any other major company, they're going to look around our community. We're hopeful that they'll stay close to the center city.
Okay. Meanwhile, LendingTree, which evidently had been looking around, they looked at 20 different locations to relocate out of Charlotte, too. They've decided to stay and to expand their footprint, bringing more than 400 more jobs at an average salary of $100,000. What sealed the deal? Why did they decide to stay?
I think that LendingTree is homegrown. Dub Lebda, who is the CEO of LendingTree, started this business in Charlotte, and I believe that he thinks that we can provide the workforce talent to stay in Charlotte. And that's another key area when we talk about what the future is about. The future is about how to get people in the right jobs and how to train people for those jobs. And Doug is working very closely with us to make sure that those jobs can come from people that are graduating from our universities, our community colleges, so that they can be in this IT tech world of financing.
Yeah, he told WCNC-TV that this decision to stay was based on the city's available workforce talent. He said, we're getting people coming here for jobs, and we're providing opportunities for people who live here as well as those who move here. But was it really about the availability of workforce talent, or was it about incentives?
It was about the workforce talent. Charlotte is known as a financial tech world now. Yesterday or last night, I went to the Association for FinTech staff and executives, and what they're doing is contributing to our ability to grow our workforce. This community has embraced the idea of economic mobility. And we know that jobs are going to require informatic training as well as empathy training. Those are the two characteristics of the future of work. And we are working very hard with our school system, our colleges, and community colleges. And often Central Piedmont should really be recognized for this. I went out to Groninger, a German company that makes the vials for medicine primarily, also for cosmetics, ladies, as well. But they are a company that works with Central Piedmont. 4 to 5 interns a year come become apprentice at that program and what they do. And so it's an interesting idea. We need to recognize where good work is being done, and that good work has an intentional goal that we decrease the flight out and bring in people that are very talented for the jobs of the future.
Of course, I suppose you look around for other opportunities to take your company to for various different reasons, because if it makes economic sense, makes business sense, you're going to do it. If it doesn't, you're not going to do it, unless you're crazy. But sometimes you do it, you start looking around simply because you want the people in the town that you're currently working in to say, whoa, we might lose these. We better ante up. How much of that played into this, do you think? Was it? How much? You know what I'm saying.
I know. You're.
Was it a ploy?
It was not a ploy.
I've got my cynic hat on.
I was going to say you're being the cynic today, but no. I think if you meet Doug and his team, you see absolutely the most sincerest commitment.
What
to
are
his
the
community.
Incentives?
I do.
The state offered more than $8 million from a job development investment grant, and the city is providing tax incentives. Mm-hmm. When cities provide tax incentives to LendingTree and to Honeywell and to other companies, where does that money come from? What do we lose Or do we lose? Is it a zero-sum game? What's the deal?
It is the idea that you come in and you locate here. And what is our major source of income? It's the property taxes. And so what happens is if you get these jobs up, which are indirect property taxes, thinking about those 350 people or 750 that are going to buy homes, they're going to pay property taxes as well. So we actually give them credit on their headquarters or their physical space, and they get a break on their property taxes after they've met the job requirements. And so what are we doing? That's what TARC is trying to say.
So what do you say to companies that are homegrown, that have been here a long time, who have never threatened to leave, never thought about leaving, but they don't get any of these tax incentives or these tax breaks? What do you tell them?
What I tell them is that we are here to make sure that they're successful. I go out and visit companies every day. They understand the incentives, and at some point they may come forward. But right now, I believe that our workforce availability, the talent that we have in this community, as well as when you look at the quality of life for their employees, yes, we do go out and reassure, and we ask them what stands in the way. Usually what I hear is, well, when we're growing, can we get more people? And if we're building, can we get a really fast process for our permitting?
Speaking of fast, scooters. They're everywhere, and more have arrived. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about convention center renovation, and we'll talk about affordable housing, all coming up with Mayor Vial Isles from Charlotte in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
WFAE wants to bring your podcast to life. Submit your story or idea to WFAE's Queen City PodQuest, a contest to find the next great podcast in the Charlotte area. Learn more at wfae.org/Queen City Podquest.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the Mayor's Day on Charlotte Talks. Mayor Vial Isles is here, and as we've been talking, some listeners have been making some observations and comments, and let me share them with you now. Peter on Facebook says, I live, and we were talking earlier about not term limits, but four-year council terms. I live in a district that seems to have lifetime terms, as the council members run unopposed until they retire or seek another office. Two-year or four-year won't make any difference.
I've heard that argument, Peter, and you're right. There are a number of people. You remember Pat McCrory served 14 years as mayor, seven terms.
Who?
So, yes, Pat McCrory, remember?
I don't recall the name. Jim emails, it is crazy how much power the legislature has over local politics. Go ahead. Please don't say Dylan rule in this room.
I will not say that, but I will say that he's right. That's the way the state of North Carolina was organized and divided, and urban areas are only supposed to do things to take care of urban problems. Okay. And after that, the state takes care of everything else.
Speaking of potential problems, scooters. E-scooters are all the rage. We have begun to enter into this conversation about scooter safety, the safety of riders, of pedestrians, of cars, as we all share the same roads and sidewalks. These scooters are virtually unregulated. We've talked about this before, and the city has not moved to regulate them. Why not?
Can I say first, I've never ridden a scooter.
Oh, you should.
I know, I should. But, you know, I just think about that and I'm like, well, you know, I think this is a very concentrated effort around our center city. You're going to go with me?
Yeah, as long as
I do have on sneaks today. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that.
You have to pay for the scooter ride.
You have to pay for the ride? Oh.
I'm not going
to
pay for it. I work in public radio, but you work for the city.
I'm the mayor, so obviously I can't afford to pay for it. Obviously I can't afford a scooter, but so let me just, we laugh about them, but scooters are really a great mobility option when you're talking about what we need to do. And, you know, I think about 5 or 10 years ago when everyone was like, what are we going to do to get cars off the road? Mm-hmm. Well, they now have arrived. And maybe everyone was just more familiar with a bicycle. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, biking has been something that we all understand. We did it as kids. Maybe some of the folks like me that have never ridden a scooter don't quite get why we would do this. But last night I was downtown and I saw one scooter laying flat across the sidewalk and one standing up, and I think that that is an issue. Yeah. The way that we are using the sidewalks, the way people aren't wearing helmets, I'm very concerned about the safety. The city council, in terms of this, we have an agreement with the bicycle companies that they can also have scooters.
Right.
And the real thing has been that scooters have been a lot more popular. The ridership of scooters is almost 400,000 for short trips.
Right.
And those short trips have consequences, like scooters leaning against whatever or lying flat on the sidewalk. We do have to get a handle on this. We need to work very hard with the industry to start talking about this and making some rules and regulations around it. I've seen a graphic chart that compares Charlotte, Greensboro, Raleigh, and how they're dealing with scooters, and there are many boxes that we all have checked. Part of what we don't have checked is whether or not they're permitting to be required in regulations.
But one of the things that I have heard, I think we've talked about this in the past, is that the city has decided not to regulate scooters in terms of how they interface with pedestrians and cars, because they're waiting for the General Assembly to do it. They know the General Assembly is going to do this because scooters are in Raleigh, they're in Greensboro, they're here, and they're going to come down with some kind of a regulation which will supersede your regulations. Is that right?
If that happens, that would be correct. And so the question is, when is that going to happen and how fast, and whether or not the industry understands that those regulations are going to take place as well.
But council has just passed these regulations that have made it easier for neighborhoods to calm traffic, that easier to ask for stop signs, easier to ask for speed humps. If this is a serious problem with scooters, and I don't know that it is, but people seem to think that we ought to regulate these things, why not regulate them until the state comes in and says, no, we're going to do it this way?
Okay, I'm trying to find the connections between our neighborhood streets and being able to have
city
traffic
council
calming.
City council could have waited for the legislature to do that, too.
No, we control our neighborhood streets. We can do that. We can put in speed humps and things
like that.
But
we don't control the streets downtown?
Well, we do control our sidewalks and what we can put on them. And the question is, do we want to start something that might be more or less than what the state would do? But I have to say that this is where I believe that we've got a disconnect. I think this industry needs to be paying attention to it, because the more people complain, I think the more restrictive requirements can be. So I'm hoping that the industry steps up and listens to this.
Because Spin, this is a new company, well, Charlotte.
Spin has a bicycle.
They have bicycles.
And any bicycle company can have
scooters.
Okay,
but didn't they take out some of the bikes to allow for more scooters? They're from San Francisco, the Spin company, and they joined Lime and Bird, and they just put 100 more scooters on the street.
They have not put those scooters on the street yet. We're working with talking to the industry representatives about when that might happen and what we might do about it. But I think you're going to see permitting. I would say that if the state doesn't do something pretty quickly, the city council will act on scooters.
Okay. Do you see a need for it?
I believe that most people would understand that our sidewalks cannot be a place that people can zip around at 20 miles an hour without some understanding of what they do. And then the other thing, I think the idea of where you put these scooters and you just drop them, there's got to be some possibility for you to have a place that they go without interfering with the sidewalks. And I think dumping scooters on sidewalks is not going to be good.
Okay. So
isn't good.
Let's talk about the convention center. City Council recently unanimously approved $110 million to expand and renovate the Charlotte Convention Center. I didn't know the building was as old as it is. How old is it?
Over 30 years old, I believe.
It can't be.
Yeah, that's I like
I
to think
when
of that.
It wasn't here.
See, that's that's what gets us in trouble when we say to people, "Oh, I remember that," and they say, "How old are you?" So no, we're not going to talk about when it was built.
Okay, so this is going to be funded through the city's hospitality tax, which means that citizens don't really pay for this. Tourists pay for this, and people who go out to eat at restaurants
for
this.
That's right.
Why did this require a council vote? We have a CRVA, a citizens. What's the CRVA?
The CRVA is a chartered advisory board, but we collect all of those revenues. They go to the state. They come back to us. They're projects that we have to approve. They are an authority. They particularly fill the space. We build the spaces.
Clearly not a controversial decision. It was unanimous on the part of council. How will taxpayers benefit from this?
Well, we're going to try to attract more industries in the tourism field, more conventions, more people coming to stay in our hotels. We're going to update it because, as you know, anything that's not consistent with technology today, that's a check mark against you. And so you've got to update the technology. And we need more space. So we're going to add square footage for display space and for gatherings.
So that's $110 million that's coming from that city tax on restaurants and hotels and things like that. That's more than twice the amount that voters approved for affordable housing in through the bond referendum in November. That vote was for $50 million, and now construction has begun on a 185-unit mixed-income apartment project in West Charlotte that is said to be a model for how the city might spend that $50 million. If you agree with that, explain it.
I think that, first of all, I want to say congratulations to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Housing Partnership, who is the developer of that project. And I do think it is a model. I think it's one of those things that, one, we're looking at our locations, and we're trying to make sure that what we put on the west and the east side is exceptionally well-designed and done well. And so that's the kind of model that we do want to have. I also would say that the housing, the $50 million, when we get the ability to match that with the private sector $50 million, that we're going to have more opportunities besides new construction. New construction is a very, very difficult way because it takes a lot of money. A unit's about $140,000 to construct. If we can save a unit, it's a lot less. If we can actually work with the private sector in the rental industry to subsidize a unit, that's even less.
So this is going to be on 12 and a half acres of land at Freedom Drive and Camp Green Street. What's there now?
Have you not been out there? It's an area that's what I would call it considered changing.
I used to work out there.
So oh, well, then
been,
you know.
It's been a while.
Freedom Drive has been, there was a Freedom Drive shopping center at one time, and right. that is now the county administrative offices or one of those offices for social services and a number of governmental services out there. But it is one of those areas that I say anybody that can get to downtown by car in 20 to 30 minutes, they're going to see changes in what's coming and growing in their neighborhoods.
Right.
You're going to see people locating there because they choose not to be able or not to be stuck in traffic. And so what you see on Camp Green Street now, I think there are breweries out there.
Okay.
You're beginning to see market rate apartments. And this property will help actually put in what I would call mixed income, but will be available for 80% and below. And we'll have people doing that across the city.
They're building 185 units. How many of them will be affordable?
What we have been doing is encouraging people that we include at least 25% to be under 30. And that's because the Housing Authority is no longer getting support from the federal government to build a lot of new units for 30 people that make 30% or below. It's a very difficult market, and we're very committed to that.
Okay. Very quickly, City Council's facing a decision on a resolution recommending giving the city manager authority to spend $500,000 without approval from council, as opposed to what he can do now, which is $100,000.
Yes.
And some people are concerned about that because the convention is coming, the RNC is coming, and some of that spending authority will be how much money we buy, we spend for equipment for police in advance of that convention, and people are concerned, at least one person, Robert Dawkins of Safe NC, is concerned that we might be out there buying army equipment for the city police without any constraints.
I understand those concerns, but I think this isn't our first convention. And what we did during the Democratic convention in 12, we're going to look at, and I'm sure there are going to be technology changes by 2020. But our number one objective is to make sure the visitors that are coming to town have an excellent experience, which means we have to be, and not just convention goers, but the visitors, every visitor has a safe place.
But does it concern you that a city, if this goes through, the city manager can spend $500,000 on whatever without consulting council?
So I'm going to go back and...
Because that money adds up after time.
So I want to say this. I remember when the city manager at the time, Pam Seifert, got $100,000. Now, Pam's been gone for a very long time. What cost a dollar then may cost $5 now. I don't see this as being a significant thing. And I have to be upfront and say, we've already given the manager the authority to execute the contracts for the Republican convention.
So you just started your second year in office, and as you do, you must have been pleased that the Charlotte Observer characterized you recently as the mayor Charlotte needed. They call you that in large part because you believe, they believe that you understand the importance of relationships, from encouraging businesses to locate here or stay here to working with Republicans on bringing their convention here. What's your reaction to that praise? Because they really like you, Sally Field.
I really appreciated it. I want to say that I think they hit some marks that I set for myself. I said all the time we would be collaborative, we would work for every project would be to the benefit of our city, and I think that they've seen that I've been really working hard to meet those objectives personally, and as mayor, I'm grateful for the acknowledgement.
They said that you've been a cautious voice and policy advocate in a city straining to move further left. Are we? And are you putting the brakes on that?
I do not. I wish I had brakes to put on things like that. I think that that's perhaps giving me more credit as mayor than I have. But I do have those conversations often that I say the most important thing is to move in a way that this community understands and you can justify it. And to always think, what's going to make the city better for the people living here? That's the number one criteria.
So I'll end this with a comment from David on Facebook. So encouraging to have a mayor like Vi Lyles, a critical thinker who demonstrates a deep understanding of Charlotte and calmly assesses facts before jumping to conclusions.
David, thank you very much.
And we'll leave it there. Thank you, Vi Lyles, for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.